Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing clutch freebies, housing market insanity, and outdated wardrobes.
Dude, you know, just before our music play there, like you said clutch freebies, and not a lot of people use the word clutch. I wonder if people think that we're going to talk about automotive repairs, but that is not the case. We're talking about freebies. Dude, we're all about getting free stuff, and so we've got a few freebies to share with folks during today's Friday flight.
Yeah, I don't know if that's like a middle-aged millennial word, but I feel like most people don't use it, but we say clutch frequently.
Let's take a poll. Maybe we'll toss that up on social media, see what people think.
Yeah, see if clutch is cool or not anymore. Probably not, but.
What if it's just like a...
I don't care. Just like my outdated clothes.
I'm still going to... Yeah, we're gonna talk about outdated wardrobes. And we're not so outdated, I feel. But we'll get to that here later on during our episode where we're talking about different headlines that we came across this week, dude. How they pertain to our personal finances. We've got a lot of great stories this week.
That's right. But before we get to that, Matt, I wanted to quickly mention we got a letter in the mail this week about debt consolidation.
I see a letter over there with a check at the top of it, which immediately caught my eye.
Yeah.
Anytime you get a check in the mail, it's like, ooh, what's this?
Yeah, this one's for $35,500.
You're rich.
Yeah, I know.
Congrats,
well, my wife is. It's got her name on it. So,
I see.
But so either Emily has debt that I don't know about, and she's just like, she just got it hidden and
she's hiding it from you.
Yeah, I hope not. And my guess is that that's not the case. But this letter was a pitch for debt consolidation, essentially. And one, Emily doesn't have this amount of debt. And two, it just reminded me, like, debt consolidation is almost always a bad idea.
Yeah.
I actually had a friend reach out literally last week. Her son had gone with a debt consolidation company, and now he's having a terrible experience. He's trying to get out of it.
That sucks.
I know. And so I just like wanted to remind people, like, you might get a letter like this in the mail, like my wife got, or you might hear an ad on TV, and it sounds nice, right? To lower your debt payments, to pay a lower overall interest rate by going with one of these companies and paying them a flat fee in order to make it happen. But debt consolidation is still one of the top complaints with the Federal Trade Commission every year. And so instead of doing that, instead of having someone else manage that on your behalf, you can do it for yourself. And you can reach out to creditors directly. Or you can even go to a non-for-profit company like the NFCC or Money Management International. I know we've talked about this on the show before, Matt. I don't want to go into too much detail. But this, this sweet, hefty check just like that came in the mail just made me, you know, want to mention it again for folks.
That's true, man. Although that is a very specific number, right? The check that Emily received. Maybe you should check her credit report. That would totally suck. If you're like, oh no, here's $40,000 that we had forgotten about. Obviously, you wouldn't do that. But yeah, listen back to episode 77. That's where we talked about debt consolidation. And then more recently as well, episode 199, we talked with Thomas Nitsche about debt consolidation and his company as well as his personal story when it came to debt consolidation. That was a really good interview for folks. But dude, let's go ahead and get to our quick sampling of stories that we found interesting this week. Dude, question for you. Would you move for money?
depends on how much and where I got to move to.
Yeah, absolutely. So earlier on in the pandemic, we talked about how Northwest Arkansas, they're paying folks $10,000 to relocate. Plus, they're tossing in a free bike. But it turns out that other locales are doing something similar. Some are calling it the revenge of the small cities. So cities like Tulsa, Tucson's doing it. Savannah's, they're doing it as well. There are a few of the cities that will pay you quite a bit of money to relocate, to move there. Tucson's program is called Startup Tucson, and it's a nonprofit that has a generous package worth $7,500 that they're offering folks who are willing to relocate there. Although it's not all cash. I saw it's only like $1,500
like
in cash.
It's like free internet and a couple other things.
Yeah. And it's like when you go to a raffle or a charity event, and it's like, this basket's worth $5,000. It's like, well,
not to me.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, that's like the retail price. You know, no one's really paying full price for
right.
But many folks have already done this. The whole state of Vermont, they're looking to pay $7,500 if you move and if you work for a Vermont-based company. And that's a more substantial offering because they're like literally willing to pay like your first month's rent, even closing costs if you're looking to purchase a home there. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. And I think for for some folks at least, moving in order to score free cash makes sense. Certainly not for everybody, especially if it means you're moving away from family, close friends, community ties, right? Like to sever it all for like a quick $7,500 probably doesn't make that much sense. That'd be short-sighted. And
2 months into it, you're like, oh, I don't know if we should have done this.
Yeah, but we're stuck here for a year because we took the money. But yeah, for some folks, it might make sense. Although moving costs money too, right? It does. It's not free to move to someplace new. That's partially just to cover some of those moving costs is what that money is there for.
Yeah, and you can't just count on your friends too. Like once you get right. to, you know, to be a certain age, it's like, nah, man, like nobody wants your pizza and beer to work all day and like hurt myself.
Early 20s, like it still works, I think. But you know, once you get into mid 30s and later, it's like, nope, that doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
I got other stuff going on. But yeah, on top of that though, Illinois will pay off your student loans if you move and buy a house there.
I saw that.
That was pretty cool. The Smart Buy program is what it's called in Illinois. We'll pay up to $40,000 of your student loan balance off, depending on how expensive of a home you're buying. We'll link to the Smart Buy site in the show notes so you can see the details. But it's just, it is crazy to think about how moving could make or save you money in a big way. And it's easier for a lot of folks, obviously, to move more than ever these days with a lot of people being able to work from home. And like I said, I think a lot of people aren't going to just uproot and move away from a place that they love. But there are a lot of folks who are like, trying to figure out where they want to settle down. And this could tip the scales in favor of one particular location over another.
Yeah, and it's definitely something to be aware of if you're planning to maybe make that move anyway, right? And so speaking of incentives that will get you stuff for free, dude, T-Mobile is upping every post-paid customer to unlimited data. And this is cool, you know, even though not everyone needs unlimited data, most folks can certainly do with less. But T-Mobile, they are doing their customers a solid and are, you know, continue to show us why they are by far the best of the big three carriers. We're, you know, big fans of Mint, but T-Mobile's really solid. So if you are on a limited data plan, that unlimited data plan is going to start this Sunday, the 18th, and it's going to last for the rest of 2021. It's pretty great.
That is pretty cool. And yeah, while we're talking about freebies, free beer is probably our second favorite thing to get besides cash. Cash is better, right? Cash is always better, even better than beer.
It's true.
But Sam Adams is giving away $7 via the Cash App if you get vaccinated to spend at your favorite local bar. Just post a pic of you and your Band-Aid or your vaccination sticker on social media and include the hashtag #ShopForSam and look out for a DM to secure that free money from that. What would you call them? They're not really a craft brewery. Well, I guess they are technically a craft brewery.
They're America's largest craft brewery, Joel.
Yeah, they're huge. They're huge. But they, you know, they do make some decent beers.
Yes.
And since we're getting shot number two next week, Matt?
Yes, we are. I forgot. It's not even on the calendar for me. I keep forgetting about it. But you will remind me.
I will remind you. And we'll get that shot and we'll get our free $7 to get some beer.
Heck
too.
Yeah.
Also too, one of our favorite local breweries, Monday Night Brewing, is giving a free case of Narwater away, which is a hard seltzer to folks that are vaccinated. I got my 12-pack last night. My wife is a big fan of the hard seltzer.
Well,
so.
You and Emily got two 12-packs because per vaccine card, that's right. you get a whole case.
She gets all mine though. So.
Well, dude, yeah. Kate loves the Narwater as well. They're huge fans of it. We are definitely going to be going to pick up ours very soon as well. Dude, one last freebie. It's also going to be free to get into the national parks tomorrow, Saturday, to kick off National Park Week. This only happens 6 different times a year. So yeah, go have a fun outdoor hiking adventure. And a little trivia for you, Joel. Do you know what the closest national park is to us where we live here in Atlanta?
I don't even have a good guess.
You're gonna kick yourself when I tell you. It's the MLK Jr. National Historic Park.
Oh, that's really cool.
So it's I guess it technically qualifies as a national park, but it's a national historic park. But otherwise, the closest like natural like outdoor park is the Great Smoky Mountains.
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Which is also a little trivia for you. Did you know that it is the most visited national park in the entire country?
The Smokies, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because
it's
so
sneaking huge. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I think you can get to it from like 3 different states. And so, yeah, by far, it's like a slam dunk. Way more visitors to that than any other, you know, park that you would think of.
Plus, you know, you get to go to Dollywood while you're there too, right? It's close.
Which I've never been to. I don't know.
Me neither, but... We'll
Pound a money trip. Let's do it.
Hopefully soon. So let's move on though, Matt. You and I were all about using credit cards for routine spending that you'd be doing anyway. And we have our preferences for which cards people should be using, right? Certain cards are better than others for the rewards that you're going to get. But it seems like brands are launching credit cards like there's no tomorrow. Like everybody's got their own credit card now and they're trying to push it on you. Like you're getting an email from one of your brands and they're like, we got a new credit card. Why don't you sign up? And oftentimes are like, we'll toss you $30 as a sign-up bonus. And it's really not that great of a sign-up bonus when you're thinking about
it. Yeah, folks already have their Amazon card. They've got like their Starbucks card. I'm even thinking about getting that Lowe's card because I spend so much money there. That one actually might be worth it for me.
That one might be worth it for you. Like Apple launched their own credit card a few years ago. And now I saw Instacart and DoorDash are planning their own credit cards too. And so it just makes me think like, man, there are too many credit cards out there. So while having, you know, credit cards in your wallet to pay for things you'd normally pay for instead of using your debit card is going to be better for you, we think, in so many ways when it comes to the rewards, when it comes to the protections that you have. Signing up for too many credit cards, and in particular some of these brand-based credit cards where the rewards just aren't very great unless you use that particular brand just an insane amount, like Lowe's, right? You know, because we own properties, we shop at Lowe's too much. and
more than I wish I did.
Exactly. But we really do spend a decent bit of money there. And yeah, unless you're getting Grubhub like four nights a week, like it probably doesn't make sense to get that credit card.
Yeah. You mentioned Instacart and DoorDash. Like even if you're into food delivery, and remember, by the way, it's going to cost you a lot of money to use those services. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to want to sign up for one of those new cards. We feel it's best to have between 2 and 4 great cards in your wallet. In particular, having a great just straight up 2% cashback card and then an awesome travel card if you like to travel, that is, are excellent places to start. Joel, you actually wrote an article about how many credit cards you should have. We'll link to that in the show notes. But just be reminded that you're going to get better rewards consistently when you go with credit cards that aren't brand specific.
No doubt. And Matt, right now it feels like the housing market is taking crazy pills, Mugatu style in Zoolander. That's still one of my favorite movies. So many quotable lines.
Have you watched Zoolander in like the past 20 years?
No, but I mean, probably not. But I still remember all the lines.
I literally think it's been about 20 years since I've seen it. I think if we sat down and watched it, it would not be as good as we remember
You're
it.
You're probably right. But I remember watching it. I probably watched it 20 times within the span of 2 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I probably haven't watched it since. But so many great characters.
It's a classic.
But it turns out that when will the housing market crash? Has seen like just like this massive spike in Google searches.
That search term
like, has seen like a 2,500% increase in searches.
Oh my gosh.
So it's one of those like interesting things. Like the median home price is up 17% year over year. And in certain specific markets, the prices have gotten even nuttier. I know Montana's been crazy. Austin, Texas, home prices are up 40% year over year. That's insane when you think about it, right?
That's crazy. Yeah. I saw a Redfin stat that said almost half of all homes that are on the market sell within a week.
Yeah.
1 week. That's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. And so like the Wall Street Journal wrote an article recently. They laid some of the blame on pension funds looking to buy single family homes and introducing even more competition into a market that doesn't have enough inventory for all the buyers that are out there. Matt, listener Chelsea sent us a story from an NPR affiliate documenting some more housing oddities that were happening in the Houston suburbs. There's a home builder, D.R. Horton. They built a new neighborhood of 124 homes. And typically, they would sell those homes one by one to individual buyers.
Yeah.
What they did instead
In a normal world.
But what they did instead, they listed the whole community for sale at once, and the online investing platform Fundrise paid $32 million and bought all of them at one time.
That's insane.
So, that's the kind of market that we're in right now, and anybody who's trying to buy a house, that's why they're pulling their hair out, because the housing market's insane.
Yeah, awful times right now for folks who are looking to buy a home, especially for those first-time home buyers. Bidding wars, you know, price escalations, it's all causing a lot of folks out there to potentially spend more than they should just to get into a house. They're having to, in some cases, forego inspections. I would not recommend that. But it's really important to be cautious right now and not get caught up in the hype and the frenzy and end up overpaying just to get into something. Renting is still a really solid proposition for a lot of folks, depending on the stage of life that they're in. You need to take into account all the different factors that might make purchasing a home for either a wise decision for you or an unwise decision. But here's the thing, dude. We saw that Fortune magazine, they actually did a study to assess whether this home buying trend will continue. And from their findings, it looks like these conditions could last for years because of the number of folks looking to buy a home, as well as the supply is likely going to remain lower than usual due to all the different factors that we are finding ourselves in. It's kind of like the perfect storm between there being decreased supply, increased demand. I mean, I saw that over half of younger millennials are planning to buy a home within the next 5 years. And so I don't necessarily see housing dipping anytime soon, but that shouldn't be the only reason that you would rush into purchasing a home. You know, if you're going to purchase a home, just like if you are going to move to Vermont, that's great. Get that $7,500 in moving costs paid for. And if you're already planning to purchase a home, then it's likely you're going to see the value of that increase in the coming years, but that's no reason for you to rush into purchasing a home when you weren't planning to already do that.
Yeah, I think really, Matt, what it comes down to is I don't think there's a bubble here. And I know people are wondering, when's the housing crash going to happen? When's the bubble going to pop? And the fundamentals support increase in prices. And a large part of that is due to the imbalance of supply and demand.
Yeah.
There just aren't enough homes out there for the people that want to buy one. I think I saw one stat that like the U.S. could use 4 million more homes like tomorrow.
Wow.
that would put supply and demand back in equilibrium. But right now, everything's out of whack, and that's part of what's causing the price spike. So sorry to everyone out there who is shopping for a home and being frustrated.
We feel for you.
Feel your pain. Well, we got more headlines to get to, and specifically, we'll talk about some viral videos going around about multi-level marketing. We'll talk about that and more right after this break.
All right, we are back. And yeah, before we get to MLMs and other scams out there, it is time for our ludicrous headline
of the week.
Did you say that loud enough? I'm not sure.
Of the week.
Okay, here's our headline. And this one comes from listener Mackenzie, and it is titled, Could Index Funds Be Worse Than Marxism? this was one that we actually came across as well. But Mackenzie, yeah, thanks for sending that one in. The headline is a perfect fit. This is totally clickbait at its finest from The Atlantic. But let's go ahead and dive in, dude. Are index funds actually that bad? If so, we are likely going to be in big trouble because you and I, we've been touting the greatness of index funds for years now on the show. We love them. But the main premise of this article is that the hordes of passive investors today are hurting markets, basically because passive investors aren't investing in companies that they believe in, that they've researched, that they've vetted themselves. They're just investing in all the companies that because of that, it's basically screwing up our financial system.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like when it comes to our individual ability to invest for our own futures, index funds are still 100% what we would recommend, despite The Atlantic's hot take on index funds.
Yes, it's less Marxism, it's more socialism.
Yeah. So yeah, it was an interesting article, and the concerns that the author brought up do make some sense, but it turns out that the data in the examples she gives are actually counter to some of the points that she's making. There's actually a good rebuttal that was written over at Morningstar that we'll link to, but Matt, you and I, we still believe in the ability of markets to self-correct and to remain efficient, even with a bunch of passive investors like you and me, and
yes,
hopefully a lot of our listeners, doing their thing, plugging away, putting money in index funds like month over month. If there are opportunities to be had by going with single stocks or with funds that are actively managed, then we can expect that investor dollars are going to flow there until the advantage is no longer there. So yeah, I'm not worried about an imbalance or a horde of zombie passive investors making the market something that's completely irrational. There are still a lot of people out there actively managing their investments, and I think they keep everything in balance for all of us.
Dude, absolutely. Yeah, index funds, they're not going anywhere, and they're still by far the easiest and we feel best way for pretty much everyone listening to the show, how they should be investing their money. All right, dude, let's talk about clothes. maybe don't listen to the Wall Street Journal about outdated clothing styles. You obviously don't turn here for fashion advice, nor should you, but the Wall Street Journal wrote an article this week about what's in, what's out, style-wise. According to their apparently hip writer, skinny jeans are out, and baggier jeans are in, especially for the ladies out there.
I'm going to have to go see if my mom sells my JNCOs from middle school.
you could like fit a laptop in the pocket.
Exactly.
Dude, if JNCOs aren't back yet, they will be, because that's how it happens, right? It's all a cycle. So my wardrobe of skinny jeans, t-shirts, and lots of plaid, it honestly hasn't changed much over the past 10, 15 years. I'm not personally keeping up with what's going on out there in the world of fashion. But here's the thing. It's not the style updates that was difficult to kind of stomach. It was the expense of the clothes that they recommend. It's like basically they're saying, if you like to wear this, instead you should wear this.
And then, yeah, like what they were suggesting was,
yes,
ridiculously overpriced.
Yeah, there's like a t-shirt that was sort of like this artistic t-shirt and listed for $140. And so instead of wearing like your graphic tee with different phrases on it, instead you should be looking to wear that. I can't get on board with that, man. Like, I'm all about, paring down your wardrobe. Like, I've got a whole handful of t-shirts that I've gotten for free, like from my conferences or like volunteer t-shirts. And it takes me like seeing a picture of myself wearing that to realize that I look like a child. That's when I'm like, oh, that thing, that's terrible. I just don't think about it when I throw it on to like do some work outside in the yard. But even still, I'm still working to like pare down some of those articles of clothing, but it's still going to be hard for me to like turn down a free t-shirt, you know?
Yeah. I'll never pay $140 for a t-shirt though.
And definitely not willing to do that. But I'm willing to spend like $10-$15 on just like a plain white tee.
Yeah.
I'm like looking to kind of go that minimalism route. I'm trying to be like Steve Jobs. That way I don't have to like think about what I wear in the mornings.
There you go. I understand that. Yeah. All right. But yeah, it's we're not fashion icons. We're not even attempting to have really any sort of insight about fashion or what is fashionable these days. I really don't know. But I will say, yeah, when the Wall Street Journal is suggesting that you purchase a t-shirt that costs over $100, it's in that price range. And some of the other clothing items they suggested were just incredibly expensive too. You can dress yourself for less, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but since we just gave the Wall Street Journal a little bit of grief, let's congratulate them because they did something awesome this week too. They deserve a big round of applause because they just made a big difference in all of our collective ability to shop for health procedures and save money. A few weeks ago, they printed a report about how major healthcare companies were using code on their websites in order to prevent customers from shopping for prices ahead of a procedure. Basically, the pricing existed on these hospital systems' website, but because of certain code they were implementing, when you searched in Google, you couldn't find it.
Yeah.
You had to...
It had that no index code built in there, yeah, so that the Googlebot crawlers couldn't find your page.
Much to the chagrin and frustration of anyone trying to save money on a procedure, right? It was sneaky, dishonest, and infuriating. When I read the story, I was upset that these hospital systems could get away with it. But fortunately for all of us, regulators responded this week to those reports, and they told hospital systems that they can't hide those healthcare prices anymore by implementing that devious code. So yeah, kudos to the Wall Street Journal. After suggesting, you know, overpriced clothing items, at least they did this, and they're lowering the price of healthcare and increasing our ability to shop for all of us.
Yeah, and it's not just the government and regulators that are stepping into it. The journal reached out to these different hospitals and the different companies that run the websites of these hospitals. And as of this week, 182 different hospitals had complied and removed that code. So I would say that's pretty great journalistic work on behalf of the Wall Street Journal. Well, dude, let's talk about Bernie Madoff. There's a lot of stories floating around this week about him because he passed away at the age of 82 while he was in the midst of serving a 150-year sentence for stealing billions of dollars, not millions, billions of dollars from super wealthy individuals. He swindled, you know, the former owner of the Mets, Steven Spielberg, and yes, even Kevin Bacon.
Say it ain't so.
The man himself.
Not Kevin Bacon.
And while, you know, Madoff, he was a crook of epic proportions, victimizing people to fund his own lavish lifestyle. His death does serve as a great reminder, you know, to all of us to be careful who it is that we are entrusting with our money. You know, so whether we're giving our money to them to manage or, you know, whether we're just listening to their advice. When someone is selling you something that sounds too good to be true, it almost always is. Those are good words of advice when it comes to how it is that you deal with your money. And so, yeah, we talked with Ben Carlson about scams back in episode 235. That was a great interview. He wrote an entire book about the history of scams and how it is that we fall for different things and some of the bigger ones over the last few hundred years.
Yeah, and Bernie Madoff, of course, makes an appearance in that book and in our interview with him. Matt, while we're on the note of scams, TikTok is apparently doing something good in regards to combating scams.
And not that TikTok's a scam.
No.
It's just we kind of love to hate TikTok.
And I don't know why. Like, maybe it's because we're old and stodgy. But like, there are apparently videos on TikTok that are attempting to explain why MLMs, multi-level marketing companies, are a bad idea. And they're racking up tons of views. They're going viral. And man, this is great because it can be easy to recruit people actually for MLMs on social media. So yeah, I loved reading about how the opposite is actually true on TikTok right now. There are a lot of people talking about how awful MLMs are. They're spreading the info, spreading the news. Yeah, the truth about the rottenness of MLMs is being heard by a lot of people who might otherwise be susceptible to falling for an MLM pitch. And we all know how that goes, Matt. MLMs don't end well for almost anybody who signs up for one.
Yeah, there's a lot of broken promises when it comes to multi-level marketing companies. And we talked all about this back in episode 254. Dude, this is definitely a listen back to this episode, Friday Flight. Because there's a lot of stuff in the news that we've covered thoroughly, though. But we talked about that, yeah, back in episode 254. The stat that we mentioned back then is still true today. Roughly 1% of people who join an MLM don't lose money. So that means 99% of people are going to lose money by joining one. The odds are not in your favor, a la The Hunger Games, right?
Right.
So whether you've seen any of these videos in your social media feed or not, stay away. Whenever someone tries to recruit you by pitching a ground floor opportunity, you know, or the ability to be your own boss, they'll only make money if you join up yourself, and it's nearly impossible for you to make any money in this venture yourself. It makes me actually think that we should probably do an episode about some of the different money-making opportunities out there. It's like some of the different ways that you can make passive income. I feel like that's something that we're hearing about more often these days.
All right, let's do it soon. And I feel like easy money, it always sounds nice, but
dude, who doesn't want easy money? Just like at the beginning here, like he showed me that check, and I was like, oh, what's that big?
Your eyes got big.
Yeah, you know, like when they got the check, I'm looking at it right now, and like when one corner has the red, they've got that going on, and there's a gradient, you know, to the other corner is blue. Like it looks legit. There's like lots of fine print, and you think, oh, is this free money? No, it's not.
But free money sounds so nice, but it ends really poorly for so many folks. In the case of, you know, Bernie Madoff or other scams out there, and in the case of MLMs too. So
that's right.
That's going to do it for this Friday flight. We hope to see you back here on Monday for some listener questions. So Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.